Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Many of us are sheltering at home with our pets, and they can provide us with comfort and companionship as we navigate this pandemic. But we also want to be safe and not give or get the coronavirus from our pets. Well, as WUWM's Mayan Silver found out, cats can get the coronavirus, which leads to questions about human-cat transmission. Mayan spoke with Peter Hafman, a research assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, who helped lead a study on cats and the coronavirus. She asked him to explain the study and what pet owners need to know.
We've been hearing reports about human-to-cat transmission of this virus. So we kind of wanted to start fitting the other pieces of the puzzle together, looking at cat-to-cat transmission here. So we had three pairs of cats. We took one cat from the pair and infected it by intranasal inoculation, some virus in the eye, and then in the mouth. And then we housed that cat by itself for 24 hours. And then after that 24 hours, we introduced its cage mate back, the non-infected, naive cat that's never seen virus before. And we kind of let those cats live together for 10 days. And then every day we took nasal samples and then looked for actual infectious virus coming out of the nose.
And did you find it?
Yeah, so we during this whole 10 days, we never saw a cat sneeze. We did body temperatures. We never saw any kind of spike in body temperature, but we were able to find virus relatively easily in the cats we infected, which didn't surprise us. But then within 2 or 3 days after we moved in that naive cat, we started seeing those cats have infectious virus too in their nostrils.
And by naive, you mean cat that hasn't been infected or exposed otherwise to COVID-19.
That's correct.
So the virus wasn't lethal in the cats and they didn't have symptoms. Is that right?
Yep. They're perfectly fine. Never lost weight. So no, the virus is definitely not lethal in them. They shed virus for 4 days, 5 days, a good 6 days, and then it just disappears. And a good thing, too, is they can't be reinfected. So they build a very high antibody response to the virus and seem, in the short term, to be resistant to reinfection.
And are you certain, I mean, this was a relatively small population of cats, are you certain that it couldn't be fatal for some cats?
That's a good question. So, you know, we work with animals that are very healthy. Just like we're seeing in the human population, people that have comorbidities have a much worse prognosis with this virus. So we definitely don't have the capability of having like very sick animals come into our study. So we definitely don't know if that's a possibility.
Gotcha. So just like with humans, if you have some pre-existing conditions or on the older side, or, you know, you just have respiratory issues, try to keep your cats especially safe.
Yeah, immunocompromised cats, that's kind of a big thing that might be out there with pet owners. So definitely, if you are in that one of those situations, definitely keep them safe too.
So I know a lot of people listening to this are probably like, well, I've got cats, you know, what are my risks of getting infected myself from a cat? And what are my risks of infecting a cat? Can you talk a little bit about how you injected these cats with the virus and how that compares with what they would be exposed to, like in real life, for instance?
Sure. So since this was an experimental setting, they got a lot of virus and they got it directly. And one of the questions we don't know for humans is how much virus is enough virus to start the infection process. We don't know that piece of the puzzle yet either. What we can say is that you're more likely to get infected from another person out in public or from another person within your household than you are from your cat. From what other people have looked at, like at the Bronx Zoo, where a zookeeper actually somehow infected some of the lions and tigers with the virus. So we definitely can see that a person might be able to infect their own animal. But we don't know the likelihood of that animal becoming infected and infecting someone else in your household. So that's another question we can't answer right now.
And what was, I'm sorry if I missed this, but what was the way that you injected the cats with the virus, like physically?
Yeah, so a droplet of virus and liquid on in their nostril, and they suck that up as they breathe in. And then also a droplet of virus in the corner of their eye. And then also we squirted liquid virus in their mouth.
And was this a special kind of virus? I mean, I guess there are potentially different strains of the virus happening. Was there any thought process into what virus you were going to use?
So only one strain circulating, but obviously thousands, millions of isolates out there. So we're using an isolate that was from the University of Tokyo. That's one of the first isolates that we got into our lab, and it's one of the isolates that we have really well characterized. So that's the ISO that we used. But if you look at sequences between all these SARS viruses, you're not seeing too much difference. So we feel this is a good representative virus as of right now.
What's the difference between a strain and an isolate?
So isolates are just the virus from individual people that have become sick. A strain would be enough mutations have occurred that the virus acts a little different.
I see. Okay. And at this point, there's only one strain.
Basically, that's what the majority of researchers, doctors out there are saying. We got one strain circulating right now.
Gotcha. And when it comes to cats getting the virus from humans and vice versa, at this point, there's no documented cases of humans getting the virus from cats, right? Or like evidence that humans have gotten it from cats. Can you talk a little bit about that? Is that something that this study wanted to look into?
So that would be the next kind of piece of the study we would like to do, but that's more something that our colleagues that are epidemiologists will have to start looking more into, start looking at cases where there's been family to family transmission and finding out, is there a cat in the household or not? Experimentally, that's something that's very difficult to do. We know with a certain strain of influenza virus in New York that there was transmission of the virus from a sick cat that eventually died to a vet staff worker at this animal shelter. So there is evidence that happens for other viruses. So something that we kind of wanted to keep in mind, too, as we're kind of carry out these studies.
And what are some of the other questions that are left unanswered as a result of this study?
What we kind of want to know now is we have this direct transmission. Cats that are in the same cage together that have a lot of physical interaction. We kind of want to take now a step further and see if you have a cat in a cage next door, a foot away, let's say, will that animal be able to transmit virus to another naive cat next to it? So more indirect, more looking now at indirect transmission of the virus. It would be good to know at for cat shelters, humane societies, just in case the virus would get into one of those facilities, are cats going to be safe cage, or if you alternate the cages, or are they going to be okay cage if they're in cages right next to each other? There's implications for those kind of facilities.
And what should people who have cats be taking into account as a result of what you learned?
Just good cat owner practices. We definitely don't want anyone trying to give their cat up for adoption now. That's definitely not what this shows, or that's not the conclusion that people should be reaching here. If you have the virus in your family or household, you should also be doing some social distancing with your pet cat. You hear every year about the dog that licks the man and he gets a flesh-eating bacteria infection. And you're told not to let your animal kiss you or lick you or things like that. So just kind of want to reiterate that kind of message for cat owners during this time right now. If they think their cat might be infected because someone in the household is infected, you know, do give your local veterinary office a call. I know the Wisconsin Veterinary Diagnostic Lab here in Madison is testing animals. So there are resources out there to get your animal tested just in case you are worried.
And what about the antibodies that you were talking about that the cats had? You know, that's something that scientists are looking into with humans. Is that something that you could get information from that could potentially help humans, or is that a big leap?
Well, no, we'll, you know, continue to monitor these cats. And I think one of the big questions out there is, a person becomes infected, does their immunity ever wane? And then that waning immunity, would that allow for the virus to reinfect them? Or sometimes do antibodies actually cause an enhancement of infection? So we can definitely kind of start testing those questions that are out there. Will the animals be able to be reinfected? And if so, will there be active virus replication or not? So we can kind of start looking at things like that too.
All right. Well, Peter Haffman, thanks so much for speaking about this.
Thanks a lot for having me.
That was Peter Haffman, a research associate professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, who helped lead a study showing cats can get the coronavirus. He spoke with WUWM's Mayan Silver.